I'm a grad student with Roger, and I'll be giving this class and tomorrow's class, and we're going to look at neural network for quantum state tomography. I think there's going to be a tutorial, right, on Friday also?
Tomorrow on Friday.
Yeah. But not really on tomography. Yeah, sure. So also on Friday. And so the philosophy behind tomography, like very broadly speaking, is that you want to reconstruct some unknown object from some partial information which comes from measurements. And so, for instance, like in medical imaging, that's what happens for like PET scan, CAT scan. So like in PET scan, you have, you know, the object is emitting a pair of gamma rays with like opposite momentum, and you have detector around it, and you can measure like time differences between these gamma rays, and you can like pinpoint the location of the object, right? And so if you only have two detectors, that doesn't really work. So you have to measure at different angles, and then you can reconstruct the position and the shape of an object. So we want to do the same thing for a quantum state. But the problem is far more complex, right? So like a quantum state lives in this huge dimensional space. So the problem itself, it suffers from this curse of dimensionality that you have seen that is like recurring in many body physics. And not only we have to represent the state, but we also have to reconstruct it from measurement. So it's even worse than usual. And tomography, it matters for many reasons in different areas. So, you know, for example, in like condensed matter physics. So you might want, for example, if you have some cold atoms in your lab and you prepare it in some ground state, you might want to verify that you actually prepare the right ground state. Or, you know, there might be some properties that you are interested in, but you can access them like directly with experiments. So for instance, entanglement is really hard to measure. So you could say reconstruct the state of the system from something more feasible, some measurement that you can actually take in the lab, and then use it to compute entanglement or like other things. And also for quantum hardware, right? Generally like verifying some like quantum algorithms or like characterize the errors arising in your hardware. And you know, this wasn't like a big deal until a few years ago. So like where brute force tomography, you could just, for 2 or 4 qubits, you could just do a brute force calculation and do tomography on it. But you know, with all this recent hardware with IBM and other, we have like 20, 40 qubits, then you can do it like a brute force approach anymore. So we're gonna look to something else, right? And we're gonna use neural network to do this process. And so today we're gonna look at pure state, so that the system is described by wave function. And tomorrow, like, we're gonna just briefly mention like mixed state. So let's like set up. So we consider, say, n degrees of freedom. And we can just restrict for like a two-dimensional local Hilbert space. So spins, qubits. So we fix a reference basis in our Hilbert space, right? And this is just gonna be given by sigma z. So I'm gonna drop the z superscript. Every time you're gonna see a sigma, it's just gonna be sigma z. Sigma 1, sigma n, and sigma j equals 0 and 1. And so we're gonna assume also that we have some like observation. Say we have a set of operators, okay. And we have their experimental experimental average, basically. So what do you call them? Oh, exp. Okay. So quantum state tomography aims to reconstruct the state from this observation. So what we wanna do, we wanna find a state psi and such that each of these operator, each of these observable computer of psi, call it okay, are equal to the average that we obtain in the experiment. Okay. So for pure state, the target state that we are trying to learn, I'm going to call it like capital Psi, we can expand it on this basis of C, right? So we want to learn it, like all these coefficients. And there are 2 to the n coefficients, right? So you can see the problem that, you know, we have to find a state here which lives in the Hilbert space. So we have the problem that we have to represent this state somehow. And then we have to extract like this coefficient. And there are 2 to the n of them. So, you know, that the measurement, if naively you would, you know, devise an observable to extract one coefficient, you would need 2 to the n of them, right? So that would be also quite problematic. So there are 2 ingredients in quantum state tomography. You have representation, and what this means is that, you know, we need to find a compact representation of our state here that we are trying to learn, right? So we don't have access to this. We want to find like some approximation of it. But we need to, just to solve the problem, we need to store this state. And then we have the reconstruction. And the reconstruction is just an algorithm, and it must be like a clever algorithm. We need to try to find, you know, a way to extract the maximum amount of information from the minimal amount of measurement so that we, you know, we don't have this exponential scaling in our measurements. And we start from a very simple case that are positive wave functions. And what this means just that the wave function of the system we are trying to learn is greater than zero for all state. This means also is real, so real and positive. And, you know, like in condensed matter, for example, this is the case for many models of interest. That's the case for like transfer filizing model. That's true for Heisenberg model in bipartite lattice, like Bose-Abbard, etc. And it generally breaks down when you have frustration or like interacting fermions. So when you have like a sign problem, what is called a sign problem in quantum Monte Carlo. But this will like greatly simplify, the framework for starter. Right, so the first step is representation. So we need to find a representation for this wave function. So we're gonna use a neural network for that. We want a neural network ansatz for psi. So in this case, you can imagine the neural network as being like a function approximator. So we have like a black box. And what this neural network does, given like one of the bases of the Hilbert space, it is a neural network. We have some internal parameter lambda. And what this gives you is some amplitude. Right? And, you know, there is some freedom in which you choose which networks to use and how to use it. But we're going to use a probabilistic graphical model. And, you know, a probabilistic graphical model, like you've seen one that is a Boltzmann machine, are really powerful to like capture this probability distribution in the full configuration of space. And, you know, the idea is that like a quantum state is a natural probabilistic interpretation, right? So we know that if a system is in some state, psi, the probability of finding the state, the system in this basic state is just like a projection of the wave function in this state, right? Modulus square, which is just the square of the coefficient we are trying to learn. Right? So we have encoding of the wave function, and we have a target distribution where we are trying to learn. And this distribution here is directly related to the wave function that we are trying to learn from the data. I haven't spoken about data yet. So this suggests basically to choose the wave function, the neural network wave function, in such a way that, you know, once we square it, we obtain the probability given by the probabilistic graphical model. So what we define this is just the square root of P of sigma divided by sigma. So this is our probabilistic graphical model. That's like the neural network, the probability given by the neural network. And this is just a normalization constant, right? So you can see already that, you know, for how we define this wave function, psi can never be negative, of course. Psi, and it's going to be real. So this is why, for now, we can only describe positive states. So this is just a partition function or like normalization constant, so that the state is probably normalized. Is properly normalized. And you know, you can choose which model you prefer for P. And we're gonna use a restricted Boltz machine because that's what you've seen in the previous few days. And so we're gonna write the, you know, if you remember, Boltz machine has two layers. A hidden and a visible layers, sigma, you call it V in the previous lecture, H, and we have connection, and the probability, so we have some weights. In this case, with the lambda, I'm referring to the weights and the biases. These are the variational parameter of your network. And the probability is given, you know, if you remember, you were integrating out the hidden layer, and you obtain E, you have the bias sigma plus, you have a sum log 1 plus E, E sigma plus C. You remember this from like last week? So you see, you have like, you can see already, you have like a mean field term here. And then you have a term which captures the correlation, right, between your qubit. So we are doing this so that, you know, when we ask what's the probability of our, you know, wave function to, you know, to generate some state, we take the square modulus of this object and we will obtain the probability given by the restricted Boltz machine. Is that clear? Any question? Yes? And one important parameter in the Boltz machine, we usually call it alpha. This is the ratio between the number of hidden units and the number of visible units. And this is kind of gives you the the converger parameter for your representation. That's similar to the bond dimension in MPS. So that's, you know, by increasing the number of an alpha and the number of hidden units, you can describe like an increasingly large class of states. And if you take this equal to 2 to the n, in principle, you can describe any quantum state. So the conversion of that parameter is pretty, it's quite important. So this is for the representation, right? And you know, we have this black box that tells us for each of the basis state what's the amplitude of the neural network wave function. But for now, all the weights are random, and you know, we haven't trained anything, right? So now we're going to look at the measurement, so the second part, the reconstruction, and the type of measurement we're going to use. And this is where like neural network tomography differs from other techniques, right? So what I told you in the first, I just want to say slide, you know, you pick this observation, you pick these observables, and you measure the average value. And this is generally true. But what we are targeting here, our object, is, well, it's this wave function here. But we don't have access to this state, right? We only have access to this probability distribution. So instead of like measuring some observable, we're going to do projective measurements on the system. And what this means is we prepare the state, and then we collapse the wave function in the sigma basis, right? So once we do this type of measurement, we're going to obtain a vector of like n classical bit, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1. And you know, this is basically doing this projection. And this particular state will appear with probability given by this square modulus of this of the wave function. So we repeat this process, right? And we keep doing this measuring, we prepare the state and we measure. And we build a data set. So data set is going to be a sequence of vectors, m-dimensional vectors, right? And we know that this data set has like the probability distribution underlying this data set is exactly that. So this is a classical distribution, right? And this is what we want to learn. And so we do the training as you have seen already for Boltzmann machine. KL training. So the goal is to find a set of parameter lambda, let's call it lambda star, for which the probability distribution of your network psi lambda sigma squared, it mimics the probability of the data. If this is true, then your psi lambda of sigma is equal to the capital psi of sigma, which is unknown, right? Remember, this is psi of sigma. And you know, remember that that wave function is always positive, so we don't have to worry about the square modulus for now, right? And the way that you optimize this network, you have seen it with in the last week, is like by minimizing the KL divergence. So the KL between the probability P and the network distribution, this is minus sum of the sigma. You have the log likelihood term, and then you have some cross entropy that you don't really care because it doesn't depend on lambda. So this is irrelevant for the optimization, right? And then you approximate this sum with the data set. So this is going to be an average over the data of the log of psi of lambda square, right? And psi of lambda, it's the square is the p divided by the partition function. So you recover what you find with the found last week. You get a log c, and you get the average of the log probability. And this is exactly the same type of training you have seen for the Boltzmann machine, right? So, you know, now we are considering like projection of the wave function in one basis, but they could be like the pixel of an image, right? That's exactly the same process. We're trying to minimize in this the distance between this t distribution, and you know, this distribution is directly related to the state we are trying to learn. Questions so far? So here comes the last part. Okay, suppose that you know, I won't go in the detail of the training or the gradients. That's exactly the same as last week. So I won't discuss any. You can compute the gradient. One of the gradient, you can do it efficiently on the data. The other, you need to do like Monte Carlo. You have seen probably Gibbs sampling, right? Yes. So you can use Gibbs sampling to like find an approximation to this term here. And then, you know, you've done the training. And now you ask yourself, how do I know how well I'm doing, right? So evaluate the network. And you know, in general, like you would compute a cost function or like some accuracy. Have you done like supervised learning? In that case, it's easier because you know you're working with conditional probability. So you just feed your data, some test data in the input, you propagate, you estimate some output, and then you evaluate your network. The problem here is that if we try to compute the KL divergence, we have to compute the log z, and this is generally hard, right? Especially if you have to do it at each iteration of the training, you should use like parallel tempering or like some annealing to compute z. So you might want to do this for like small system, but in general, you might want to find something else, right? And so another way to go is that you compute some observable between the data and compute the same observables using your wave function. So, and the only requirement is that this observable must be diagonal in this space, right? So if they're not diagonal, you cannot compute them on the data. So diagonal means is that, you know, you can take your observable, it just assume this form in this space. So you can take your data, and then you say, well, what's the average value of O over the data? Well, that's this is the O. And so this is just, since it's diagonal, you can, you know, imagine like you get like spin projection. And then you ask, you know, what's the magnetization? Now you don't need the wave function to do that. If you have the data, you just take your spin vectors and you compute the average magnetization, and then for each looping over all spins, and then you do it for all the spins because the magnetization is diagonal, right? Sigma z. Just call it. If I would ask you, you know, what's the average value of sigma x, then that would be not possible. And then you can repeat the same thing for the model. And now you have your O and you have your RPM. And so this is psi O psi, right? since it's diagonal, this is equal to psi squared of sigma. And so once again, you know, we can use Gibbs sampling, because this is the average we expect to the Boltzmann machine distribution. And so we approximate this just as a Monte Carlo average. And you can use like Gibbs sampling for estimate that. And so, you know, like, this is like not a sufficient condition, but it's necessary. So, you know, if you train, if you're trying to learn the wave function of an Ising model once again, and then you compare magnetization along the z-axis and you find that these two matches, that's a good sign. That doesn't mean that you actually learn the wave function perfectly. But if you compare magnetization, always in z, of course, two-point correlation function and the susceptibility, and you find convergence, that's a pretty good sign that you find a good state. Of course, the best thing to do is always computing the KL divergence. And if that's zero, then you know that you learn the data, right? And the cool thing that we can do now, once we have the wave function, and we can go beyond the diagonal observable. So you can say, you know, like I train a wave function, that's what's different between the classical case you will see on Tuesday in the tutorial tomorrow and on Friday. And that in this case, you can train on one basis and then compute observables in other bases, right? And so, I mean, when this is not true anymore, and this is, you have an off-diagonal observable. So, see. Okay. Oh, now you have double sum. Then you can still use the wave function to train on Z, compute that. And this is just, you can do this on the data, but you can do it on the network. Now you get a psi sigma. Psi of sigma prime, and you have this. And you can reweight this sum. This is a trick that you usually do in variational Monte Carlo. It's a really helpful trick. So you multiply and divide by psi of sigma. So what you obtain is now you have psi of sigma and psi of sigma, and you break this sum into two. You get psi of sigma square, and then you divide the other sum, and you have the psi of sigma prime divided by psi of sigma sigma prime. So you see, you have, as before, you have some average of an observable which does not depend on sigma prime because you sum here. So this is, again, 1 over z. Sigma p lambda of sigma. And this is what is called local observables in Monte Carlo. That's pretty wrong because it can be non-local, but that's just a name. And it doesn't depend on sigma prime, so you can compute the average as before. Clearly, you know, you have to do this sum, so you can do it for any observable. It must be sparse. But this is the case for any observable interest, right? So if, you know, if you want to compute, say, the magnetization around X, then, you know, what this is, say, sigma X on spin J, sigma sigma prime, the matrix element of this many-body operator, remember, you're in the full N, Hilbert space for N, N spins. This is sigma xj, sigma prime. This gives you basically the delta function for all the spin except the j, and flip the jth spin, right? So this sum was actually reduced to one term only. And that would be, you know, this local observable would just be the ratio of the wave function with the jth spin flipped. And this is, you know, this is very cool because, you know, imagine that you can build one of these spin models on the lab, right? But you can only measure in one basis, which is usually the case because measuring like different bases can be tricky. And so, you know, as long as the wave function is positive, so you don't have phases, you can learn the full wave function, right? And you can train on this data, and then you can ask the network to, you know, compute any other observable. And, you know, I'll show you tomorrow in a slide that this is the case, for example, for a quantum simulator we have looked at, where they are like data from the experiment. And, you know, they only measure in one basis, but training on that basis, you're able actually to, you know, just compute other things. One is entanglement, but other off-diagonal observables are also an example. Any question? Like, is that clear? Maybe it was a bit too fast. So this was a bit the simpler case where the wave function is always positive. And so, you know, it's kind of straightforward how to like encode the state in terms of probability distribution. You can just take the square root of the distributed probability, right? But in general, the wave function is not always positive and greater than zero, positive and real. And this turns out to be usually interesting states, like in condensed matter, for instance, or you know, if you have like some like circuit, and generally the state at the end of the circuit will have like complex amplitude. Or that's also true in general in experiments, right? Because we can control perfectly all this, all the interactions, so you will have a complex wave function, as is for like time evolution. So in this case, your amplitude, the thing you were trying to learn before, are complex numbers. So you can break them into, say, some amplitude and some phase. Right? And you can see the problem already in that if we measure in this space, and I take this probability. Then this is just the square of the amplitude, right? So like everything, every information about the phase is lost in these spaces, right? So the problem here is that, you know, you have to find a different different set of measurements, and you can access directly the phase. There is no such a thing that allows you to measure the phase directly, right? So what you can do instead, and you can, in before, you remember we had the state before, and we were doing projective measurements. And instead of doing this, you can like perform some unitary rotation. Say you act with a gate here. And you know, the goal is that you do the rotation in such a way that in the new basis, in the new state here, the amplitudes, say p prime of sigma after the rotation, such as this object. Square contains some information about the face, right? And, you know, maybe it's, yeah, I still have time. So maybe we can look at an example for two qubits. I think that's kind of educational. So let's consider two qubit example. So for two qubit, let me just get the Z back in the game here, because otherwise it gets like more clear. So our original wave function, sigma one, see? And we have one, see? Right? Just two qubits. These are complex numbers. And so if you measure, you know, you measure in these spaces, Z and sigma to Z, then you learn these four amplitudes. VA 0, 0, psi A 0, 1, etc. And once again, you take the modulus square of that object and all the phases are lost. And so let's see what happens when we rotate one qubit. So, you know, we have some freedom in the rotation. Just do the simplest one we know, that is like a Hadamard gate. So we have, you know, spin one, spin two. We prepare our state, sigma, sigma, z, and then we do a Hadamard gate here. And then we measure. So what the Hadamard gate does, it basically does a base. Is a base transformation where you change the basis of the qubit from sigma z to sigma x. So, you know, yes, you could build a full unitary rotation and then apply to the state. And for two qubit, yeah, it's like a 4x4 matrix, and you can do the matrix vector multiplication. But in general, if you want to see the effect of this rotation in like a huge space, you don't want to do that, right? So, you know, to see what's the state after, you could apply, you know, the Hadamard gate on the one, the other entity on two, on psi, right? So, you know, we can do this, but I'm not going to do it this way. But what we are interested, say we want to rotate the first qubit from the base sigma 1z to the base sigma 1x. Right, so our wave function is gonna be, you know, sum over sigma 1x, sigma 2z, and we're gonna have some new amplitude, right? Which depends on sigma 1x. X, sigma z. Right, the hope is that this object here will contain the amplitude of this object will contain some information of the phases in the original basis. And so we ask, what is this, right? And this is just, you know, sigma 1x, sigma 2z of psi. So you can resolute the identity here. This is another trick to, not a trick, but usually how to do this rotation. Right, and this is just the matrix element of the Hadamard gate. Right? So this is for an Hadamard transform. This is just the projection of the eigenstate of sigma x on the sigma z basis. Right, so if you expand this, you find that this is, so when this is zero, the state does not depend on sigma x. So it's just psi of sigma 1z equal to 0, sigma 2z. And when this is 1, the state is flipped, right? So we can write 1 minus 2 sigma 1x, psi of sigma 1z equal to 1, sigma 2z. So, you know, if you have 0, and this is 0 plus 1. If you have 1, is 0 minus 1. So that's, again, the Hadamard transform. And you see probably where I'm, maybe, where I'm going with this. So once I take the, so this is my coefficient, right? But I want the probability of finding this state in these spaces. And this is the square modulus of this coefficient. So I'm just going to skip all the same calculation, but this is going to be proportional to the cosine of theta sigma 1z equal 0 sigma 2z minus theta sigma 1z equal to 1 sigma 2z, right? So by rotating one qubit, now on a new wave function, at all the coefficient of the wave function has changed, and it's changed in a way that, you know, we have encoded some partial information on the phase in the new amplitude. And you know, you have to do this for the first qubit. You see that you can go only get C00 minus, theta 10 or theta 01 minus theta 11. So that's not enough. Just get phase differences, right? So you can do the same for the other qubit. And this will give you other other difference in phases. And you know, we have rotated the from z to x, you can rotate them from z to y. And this will give you the sine, because you know, you need both sine and cosine to estimate the phases. So, but this is generally the philosophy of this basis rotation. And in general, you don't need to do like multi-qubit gate, so you can only shift one at a time. But in general, you might need 3 to the n phases for a generic mixed state. Like, so that's, again, this exponential overhead entering this technique. And you know, for the case of complex state, the kind of the procedure is the same. Now you remember for the before we had this neural network wave function, which can only be greater than zero and positive. So the way that we basically capture like a complex, we add a new set of parameters and we add the phase. And we pick this phase to be the logarithm of p. This is just so that when you do the gradient, things are nice, but it could be p as well. So effectively, we have added a layer in our neural network. So this is the lambda. This is the machine you had before. And now we add a mu, a new layer. So we have more parameters, but clearly, but we have more free parameters to learn from the original state, right? And so the difference, the only difference in the, not really a difference, when we do the training, is now we have to minimize the KL divergence in all the bases. So what we had before this sum over the data before, logarithm C lambda sigma squared. Now we have also the sum over, let's call it these spaces here, of a new parameter. So it doesn't really change much. Yeah, that's pretty much what I wanted to say today. And Yeah, so if you have any question. Yeah, so tomorrow we're gonna just gonna show you like a couple of demos of this thing like running on my laptop and like doing some for like a small system, and then show some results for like large system, basically, and some results for experimental measurements as well. Yeah, I think we can like wrap it up here. If you don't have any question, we go ahead.
Are people actually using this?
Yes, only me for now. No, well, I mean, no, not yet. But this is very recent, right? This is like a few months, and there are still things that we need to improve. And you know, in general, the fact that we assume the wave function to be greater than zero is a big assumption. In general, in the experiment, that's not true. And to have like to get all these spaces rotation, the experimental apparatus must be like good enough. They must be able to do that, which is not always the case. Yeah.